Love my life, love my love. Thou art the sweetness which I do see. In the thought thy days, thy name. So sweet, so sweet. Devotee knows how sweet you are. He knows you let go. Thou art my life. Thou art my life. Thou art the sweetness which I do see. Thou art my life. Thou art my love. Thou art the sweetness which I do see. In the thought that I love God, I taste thy name. So sweet, so sweet. Devotee knows how sweet you are. Devotee knows how sweet you are. He knows you let go.
Yeah. inputs equals outputs. Our first input is in the prenatal stage of the mother and father. The moment the sperm are released, they live in an environment of the commune. Brothers and sisters are happy living. And then suddenly they go out without any pressure. Put into a state of emergency. I only have one motivation to have to move. The anxiety of not moving into a strange environment without any guidelines in the basis of all. Now at that level, before you were thrown out, you were brothers and sisters, and you love each other and you die for each other. And you were at the high end, how much you would do. And you would give a very fist to the other person. But when you finally come to the deadline of the merging of the world, realize only one can find and become a human being. The driving instinct of survival overrides every condition of security, and then you become the greatest criminal. Survival at that level is photographic. There's no language there. And it's very, very dramatic. You know, without fight, that the winner is born. The loser is born. Sometimes, the old may have what they call multiple cases, and therefore the race begins. If the closest partner is perfect, emerge in the cage. At that level, the air, if we don't lock it with the various cages, it's synchronicity for equalness. It's going to be a problem. That is a biological message throughout the entire universe. Then the greatest fear comes from who is going to knock on it. At that level of the very innate quality is implanted in the atom, no greater love than even if they don't have life for a better time. not the driver of the first living having travel. And therefore, this world that has a happy slow down, the merge into the various children. And so, if they do merge on time, we have a trip, that can go on, depending on how many cases they do. Then by pecking order of success, based upon the number of the ovum that is being used, or every ovum can be recorded and identified, thus setting up the synchronicity of the code will be both sperms at the bottom. So if it's the 235th menstruation of the mother, last month, this month is going to be 236 ovum, sending out a signal like this. This is ovum 236, colon sperm 236, colon sperm 236. This is ovum 22, colon sperm 236. And the anguish of their Italian body starts to work at the cow. So this is begun, but 236 ovum already signaled. For 226 in the proximal contour, and they don't know how many sperm there are, but at least this is a fantastic race. And all of the imaginary anguish and frustration. But when the race is narrowing down, sperm 226 might be kept to get by the door of the band, win or lose. But then he looks and realizes, gee, he's 226. His number is up. He's being called, he's got to perform. And that's because he sonics the direct command. The intra-ear sonically, the time has come, very nice number. Stand up and become you. And therefore, all the survival functions of that sport generate hope. If there are openings in the same oval, like A, B, or C, cage, then we have other proximal sperms, for example, just before the entrance. But 2-6 is a fellow who has not priority in pecking order. And 2-7, 2-8, 2-9, they're going to be the runner-ups. And 2-5, you have a chance, right? If not killed him, you can't go single. He's going to have to lose that. But 2-7, 8-9, you're going to want to be the racing for 2-6 to end up the game. And in that moment, we have to be. So this is about the first alignment. We are bond together, like space shuttle, knocking. Then, in the 9 months process, when we're ready to fund it, the first one is going to be out. That is 2-6. Now, if these jokers don't obey the rule, and they fail to recognize their timing, then a problem is going to happen. And we look at desperate too early. Two sperm racing for the ovum. And 2-7 does not regulate its speed. When fully well, 2-6 has force action and tries to jump a jet out of the field of the sonics that is picking up this 2-6 on it, but it is that particular. If it doesn't align itself and it moves too fast, nature or self will perceive nothing. The mother and the father will know nothing there. But these two fellows now, they know what happened. And the day of delivery comes, you see there's a sign with the but a strange phenomenon is there. They're connected. The head of one is higher than the other. The whole other body is formed. It tells the person who's working something directly. Now this was a person. He didn't obtain by the rules. And therefore, the compensatory law within the structure of nature sets everything in balance and proceeded from lockdown together. Because this auto type, let's say A, slowed down for B. The B didn't regulate the speed and B tried to jump to get in ahead and got locked. The compensatory law of nature interceded in the on the behalf of A, knowing that this A is rightful right to be there in that room. B doesn't have a rightful right to be there. So what happened? They lock. They come out and you will see. A is slightly ahead of B.
A is the one that was behind that you can jump away.
That's right.
The heat is slightly higher.
Right, because, exactly. Because that is what the compensatory law did. If you pull them forward and lock it, so that B now doesn't have any way to be a winner out of context. So even if coming out of the room, A is still hitting the air first because it's ahead. It's his rightful position. Then they can measure now the biological resonance and the codes in it, and they will see. One is 2 seconds in speed of measurement over the other. That is becoming more of the obvious in this study. Therefore, they can now say, well, if that be the case, we can cut and have function, but the B will not be smarter than B. Even though the parents will want to play back in the other way, but A will always be smarter than B. That has the rightful function. The fear is in the sonics. How do you spell fear? Put a hyphen between the F and the E, and what you got? Air. To a certain musical range. And what is F like?
E.
There's no such thing.
There's no such thing.
Yeah.
How does it sound? Right? Isn't that the way you're scared of it? What is the sonics coming out of your voice? You ever see cartoons where the animal is being chased? The sound it makes. And today, with the research going on in the RNAs, the DNAs, they have fun. That sound regulates the RNA, not the DNA. And music that is highly programmed with RNA generates a lot of fear and break up in the genes. And music that are geared to DNA won't do that. Two doctors were doing research, one is a Japanese doctor, the other is an American doctor. They are both zeroed in on the actual science of fear affecting RNA and the DNA. This particular sonics does not help the mechanism to speed up and tremendous growth of the body and the mind. And the stress level of growth. And the equipment that measures stress regulates the individual to slow down. It's basically a sign. Knowing that a fear has an origin in something, and knowing that your own voice gets triggered by anticipation, and the enzymes in your saliva will follow the rule when this is the rule of the and the problem, and not what you want. You have two options. Either to build up and accept what the promise in your body, or religion. 9 times out of 10, you may be a victim of it, because you do not know how to put it on the promise. It's a promise. If somebody points a gun at you, chances are you're doing your panic, and you're actually pulling this trigger, you will act on the trigger. Panic is too difficult. If you're building it on fire, panic is too difficult. Then the actual fire, or the actual bullet, panic will create more interest without the actual, than that hold it out of you. Yet I was so certain that panic can be an actor. How can you use panic? That it can generate panic. It's not as an instrument that to the own survival.
Is it
how the intention can develop the medical capacity.
The ancient man?
Develop the medical law. All you got to do is just mark a lot. So you learn how to develop the market of the market. Or how to function together. And not grow it or screw it. But you have to do it in a very loving and artistic way. But you know, you've got to work your way up the ladder. So you've got to get angry before you get that loving. Because if you remember, at every woman there's a second guy to follow up.
There was some martial action going on in order to get the wife. This is basically art.
Masonics can't replace that. Then you look at a situation. Panic. Let's say there's fire here. If you panic from the burn fire and everybody making noise, you can run out of the building, cut yourself, and you go in the burn down before the act of something. But if you approach the fire in a calm way, without panic, you can more or less control how the rest of the world gets out. So the good old game, fireman. Control the process. It's praying not to panic. That's why lifeguards and all these people who are doing any kind of control service, the police, and the left, they're trained to go without panic. But you can't rely on specific. Which is a good the line, the musician told us, we don't know how to do it before we get started. Mm-hmm. Never get rid of it, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody's got to coordinate and synchronize in time. Mm-hmm. The same way in the sort of hibernation. You can't function with someone to do that. You have to have someone to do it. Not to get them out or succumb to time. And it's necessary to caution and to prevent. So therefore, human beings can't cope with fear if they understand what triggered it. What triggered it is fire. Fire! Right away. Mm-hmm. If you smell it, you might like to liable to go and like investigate. You're never going to react right away. If you smell something burning, mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10 you go looking for it, right? But if you hear fire, 9 times you go right. You want to get away from this area. See, this is what the sonic is doing every time. So, locked into anguish and frustration of sonics, and by the same token, control is possible without having it.
Like governing yourself. Now, wait a minute.
Right, because I've talked to yourself, that's why the sonics went. If you heard it, your siren blows, and then you think it's a calamity. But then if you don't program yourself to react, you're going to run into this kind of thing. You will find yourself having to compose or emotional. And the first thing that goes in a panic is happening. So, you have panic before you're born. And you overcome it by being the winner. You have panic when you came up with a question calling. Because you overcome it before the ear left in your nostrils. The human beings cannot breathe through the womb, through their nostrils. So they're connected to the nose, to the vertical cord, the speaker. But when they come out of the womb, that's the cause. That's the typical panic button. If you hold your ear in, if it's oxygen, the DNA will get to the contact. If it doesn't seem to want to hold, you have to put mechanical equipment to reinforce it, like oxygen respiration, which are deprivation conditions. And when it doesn't hold, then you have to tell it there, the speaker. When the cord is cut and the mechanism is in the respiratory level, then panic occurs. That's the critical stage. If it does hold, then you are satisfied that it is functioning on its own momentum in such a way that it still wants. And the evidence is showing up in non-decomposition bodies versus decomposition bodies. The ratio of carbon retention in the blood is very high in the decomposing body. And the ratio of carbon that doesn't block light is showing up in the non-decomposing body. One blocks light and the other doesn't block light. They are finding diamond crystals now in the non-decomposing body instead of finding the average carbon crystal that will block light. Dr. Rowe, in his research, when he was given the body of Yogananda, made this affidavit and said, this man is technically not dead. There's no way to validate that the body is dead. It is living. But how is it living? We are now discovering that death has two levels. The man Jesus made inference about that
And he was in the body. He had a friend who was in the grave. His name was Lazarus. He was told that Lazarus was sick. He paid no attention to the sister's message. And he kept going away further from Lazarus' house. And then the message came that Lazarus is dead. By that time, the sisters are all there, said, pissed off at Jesus. Because they put up him in his house and treat him nice. He would be pretty angry. But, you know, he was smiled because by his guru. But he had that stupid that, you know, that in your mind you're angry because he didn't correspond or really come in for people to take care and help your brother. It's a normal function. But it's not going to write it down to hurt the public. But if you're dealing with humanism, then you know it's there. But it's not something that destroys. It's something that is essential to be recognized. He turns around and goes back, and then he makes a remark about the debt after he was told about it. He says, this is not a debt unto the debt. To the average man hearing this and being programmed for centuries, would know what the hell he's talking about. And would assume all kind of conditions in your head as to what it really means. And when you get to the actual physics, then you would be talking about. A debt, not unto the debt. Then he asked them, where is the body? And they said, Master, he's in bed. Then he goes on and says, Lazarus, come forth. Picture for one moment, you're Lazarus lying down in that coffin there, saying, man, I ain't going to get up. You haven't enjoyed this. That would be your mental reaction. You're being called forth, not to come out of the grave. You look for a long time to go take a vacation. You see, but he comes out, and here is the counter comment on the situation. Father, I didn't have to say it in a loud voice, only because of the people around. This man is talking fantastic science, but it begins to be tapped until we start to work with anatomy, physiology, and electrical equipment. We see now what he's talking. Death experiences are showing up in the hospitals, where day by day you have to face the reality of people shutting down. A debt, not up to the debt. That means debt has two functions. In the hospital it's called clinical debt. When the body shuts down and cannot respond to all the mechanical gadgets to keep it breathing, it's performed and classified as clinical debt. Then the next statement is terminal debt. That means that the body is going to go through decomposition. And in the case of Lazarus, he was in clinical death and not in terminal death, because he was called forth from the grave and he came out. There is vast fields in the human anatomy responding electromagnetically and chemically between a clinical death rate and a terminal death rate. Anyone who has been through a death experience knows there are certain conditions going on in the body. Now, also there was a woman who was the daughter of a man called Jairus, living at the same time. And this girl was supposed to be dead. The doctors told the father, his daughter is dead. He goes to the man Jesus and tells the man Jesus. And the man Jesus tells him, she only sleeps. Now, does a man know what the hell he's talking about? He can use the word sleep to a father who has lost his child? Think for one moment. I don't care how you respect the person, the terminology would have to have dynamic reaction to the law of physics. And they scoffed at him to say that. The doctors were standing there, this guy don't know what the hell he's talking about. She's sleeping. Naturally,
they themselves didn't even know the depth of physics that he's talking about. Yet he goes and he activates Jairus' daughter, telling us within the framework of physics now, or science, or the actual truth, that the child was in a terminal death or a clinical death, which one? It was in a clinical death state because it didn't breathe, right? Now, Yogananda had his teacher one day, and one day the teacher didn't move in the bed and show no signs of breathing, and he thought the teacher died. So he picked up a mirror to check and to see if this teacher's really dead. Well, then you don't come out no air, you know, no fogginess from your nostril, and you ain't moving, and you're stationary like a log. Nine times out of ten, you're gonna say, well, you're dead, right? Then the man opens his eyes and says, budding experimentalist, what the hell are you gonna see? That's a funny remark. Budding experimentalist, why don't you go to sleep? In other words, he's trying to show him there are levels of death. Then Paul comes along in his time and says, I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in God. He knew what he was talking about. He's not talking terminal death. All these men are talking clinical death. Today we call it the death experience in the hospital. Clinical death is valid. It's a state where the organism can shut down, but does not go into biological breakdown or decomposition.
Is the omega state experienced in that?
Yes, but you have to understand the physics before you can see what the brain is doing.
I wanted to ask you something about Yogananda. I think it's in Kriyananda's book that when he was lying on his bed after his death, and with the folk were going in one by one to pay their respects to him, the Daimata went in and was kneeling by his bed, and the tear came out from under one of his eyes, and he had it in a handkerchief. And I've wondered about that. I mean, what was the message? What was the meaning for his disciples and for those of us who are householders? So I feel like there was something more than within that story than words. I feel like it meant something. Or that he was saying something.
In our modern time, we have become very skeptical about the laws of nature and our relationship with the Creator. And therefore, we tend to phase out belief over specific measurement. This is because we're evolving. We don't want to be continually telling ourselves to believe in something that we don't have any evidence measure. We feel it's not practical and it tends to generate a lot of false conditions. So realized masters who have fully realized the context of their true nature is giving scientific evidence to their students and those that are remaining that their future evaluation of what they truly are is locked up in the cell. He consciously shut his body down before everybody and went into a state known as death in a clinical way. But he induced this by literally going into it. His students are there. He would have taken the responsibility to consider them as students if he had not already taken the responsibility to be one, a spiritual ideal, and one who would resolve their problems, even going beyond, as you say, the teacher is beyond the mother, the father, the brother, the aunt, and all. It's the one who really feels the utmost for a human being, because he is the manifested, realized being, the active God in the flesh. Well, how is this active God principle going to satisfy the little me who is so stupid and is hanging on for some kind of consolation from the human body. That creative principle is have to satisfy me in some form. So if a little teardrop rolls out of the eye in a condition known as clinical death, and this student is so engrossed with the love for the principle locked up there, not for the body itself, for the principle is satisfying that conscience, that being, with something tangible to remember. But the question comes up, the teardrop came out of the eye. Prenanda never went any further to write about it. But whenever Dayananda writes about it, she'll tell you the teardrop didn't dissolve. It's a crystal to this day, as momentum of dawn. But she never went right until she built it. So every human being who related with Yogananda had something given to them when he passed away. I can vouch for that in my own life. When I received the notification that the master had passed on, I look at that thing in the mailbox and I swear, I don't know a damn thing, I missed my chance, I should have gone and see this guy, what am I doing here? I really swear it off. And then I felt my eyes closed down, and I tried to open it, but I couldn't open it. But I heard this voice deep inside my whole body, "You know it all, what more do you want?" So then my eyes opened. I have never heard Yogananda's voice literally, other than from different experiences. But then, Kriyananda sends me a record of Yogananda's voice 2 months after the funeral. And when I heard the voice, I started to laugh. And my friend, the lawyer, said, "Oh, you gone crazy, man?" From that record, I said, "No." I said, "It's the way the voice is talking." Because Yogananda, when you hear his voice on the record, it's on a, "I, Parahamsa Yogananda, I'm singing or I'm talking." Imagine he saying to me, "You know it all." "I, Parahamsa, you know it." There's no way for you to crawl in your head to say you don't know what it's all about. The laws of physics pertaining to the truth now is becoming obvious in my head. I realized that I began to understand for the first time that none of these writings had anything to do with imagination. All the lives of these great men were highly locked into fantastic science. My job is to go back, sort it out to make it understandable so I can live with it, and not try to look for miracles or magical conditions or run from the world, hide myself on the mountaintop. My brothers and sisters are living here in the muckups. So I have to live here. I can't run away. But it's to understand what I'm living with and to work with. So that's what he did for me. And then after he did a lot of things. The voice was there. I had the evidence that these men were in that state. I had to make a connection with the atomic physics. But you see, his death could not occur before the atom bomb was developed or released, in order to make scientists take a second look at the human body, not just assume that it's just a mass of flesh and it may have a soul and it comes in by some virtue of behavior. The atom and the research now is pushing us much more to the true nature that we are soul, a power that represents the creator in living action. But we are not the creator. That's the only difference. The creator has become us to allow us to experience interplay called duality. Right brain, left brain. Yes, no. And merge back into the unified field, which is enlightenment. We are like the unfinished chicken inside of the egg, waiting to break out of the shell. But the chicken in the egg don't touch the chicken until mama sits in it for 21 days, and then it breaks out. You ever see a hen break the egg shell to get a chicken out, or if the chicken breaks the egg shell to come out? The chicken breaks the egg shell to come out. And when I was a kid, my mother always said, do not feel compassion for the chicken and take off the shell while it's coming out. You're a kid. Then you know that you're a young kid and you listen to your mother saying that you're always going to want to do what? So here's the chickens, they're hatching, and I've got to take care of it. I see this one crack the shell, and all the rest are already out, but this one is taking its time to come out. And so me, with my good heartedness, going to church and everything, I'm starting to feel. And the chicken isn't moving, and he remains beat up. And then my mother comes along and she sees all the chickens, she sees this one there. She said, why is this one like this? What have you done to it? She said, Mom, I didn't do anything to it. It came out of the road. She said, come on, I know chicken did. Yes, you did something to this one. I helped peel the shell off it. Didn't I tell you not to do that? Or you see, you're not going to get the strength to survive? Then I started to cry. Naturally, in my heart, I feel guilty. Oh, God, what did I do? Then my father comes along and says, okay, you made a mistake. You admit it. Now, take note. What are you going to do in order to give you some understanding of why you must follow instructions? So he took a coconut shell and he put it over the chicken. In my mind, I start to cry, you can die! That you? This coconut shell knocking off all the air and the chicken. And I'm crying, I shout, you can die, and push back up. My father pushed me aside. He takes a little piece of stick and taps the coconut shell in a sonic resonance. At that time, I had the slightest knowledge of what sonic resonance is. All I could see, he beat in the hell of the coconut shell, and he's killing the chicken with his family from here. And then he lifts off the coconut shell and lays the chicken. And this chicken became the leader of all the gang, beat them out, pushed in his place, and got his food, and he grew to be the strongest chicken in the world. And years after, I realized the science behind it. And there I see my father tapping it and trying to shut off. When you don't know, you assume all kinds of things, and then you find out there's a fantastic science involved. So where do one get it? Only by trial and error, and being handed on by people who preceded us. So, coming back to the death process, it is true that we discover that we don't have a soul to save. We are soul. We're endowed with the property to save the body from decomposition, from the incorrect decisions that we've made all through our life. We gotta clean up our act. So the only lesson we've got is cleanliness is next to godliness. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. Clean up our act. Get back to the truth in the living room. And the death process is this avenue. There are two stages of death. Clinical death, terminal death. Now Jesus was on the cross. They nailed him to the wrist or in the palm of the hand.
Wrist.
You can know anatomy.
To the wrist.
To the wrist, right. So anytime you see artwork with Jesus being nailed in the palm of the hand, you know he didn't know much of anatomy. Genuine facts. From the shroud, it's in the wrist because of the way the anatomy is set up. It'll take a type of nail that was used years ago in that period, what you call a chisel type or crescent tip. They will pull up the body. But normally they never nail a person to the cross. Crucifixion was primarily for guerrillas who revolted against the government and was made a public spectacle, and began in the time of Spartacus, when Caesar wanted to make these people an example of don't revolt against the law of Rome. And from then on, crucifixion was administered to him. In his time, he was nailed. And he was stuck with a spear. He didn't die on the cross in a terminal state. He went into what is called a clinical death by saying, "Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit." Consciously shutting down the organism and going into what is known as a clinical death state that would not indicate breathing. Now, Joseph of Arimathea wanted to take the body down because it was Friday afternoon, the next day is Sabbath, so normally it would be very difficult for them to do that on the Sabbath. So he requested from the centurion to get the body down because he said he's dead. The centurion couldn't believe that the man could die because they know the body doesn't go off that so fast. So he sent somebody to check. And the person he sent in those days, today they call him a sapper, one who probes the dead body to find out if it's living, because many soldiers at that time, when they're marching through, the enemy pretended to be dead. And when they passed, they would stab them in the back. So they made a precautionary act to prevent that happening in their legions. They would have these guys who would come along and probe the dead bodies to make sure they were doubly dead and not playing dead. So he sent that man to check if Jesus was really dead on the cross. When he went, all he's looking for is two things. A grunt that will tell you he's alive and he's faking it, or a yell from the pain of the penetration of the spear, and then he'll finish the job. See? You know the person is alive. If he's really dead, he don't make any sound. If he's not dead, he's going to make two sounds, a grunt or a yell. He pushed the spear, and they said blood and water came out. But he made no sound. That was more important to the man who was doing the test, because the man who was doing the test is not a doctor. He's not trained in the anatomy, makeup of what the body is supposed to do. And all he's concerned is, did it make a grunt or cry out? That's all he's going to go and report and tell the centurion, right? So when he did push the spear, no sound came out, no grunt. He was satisfied with that. Mm-hmm. When in actuality now, blood and water came out, indicating that the body is in its state of terminal or clinical death. Which one? Clinical death, that's correct. Body was in a state of self-induced clinical death, because it says, "Father, into thy hands I command myself." The creative consciousness switched down the mechanism. You know that as the borderline state between delta into omega, when the brain switches into that part. They take the body down, they put it in the coffin, and in 3 days, it came out. Now, to ensure that the body's not going to walk away, they put a big rock. You can see how these people were taking precaution of not being fooled, let alone happening to something like that. And the rock was rolled away from inside, not from outside, because nobody could come and push away the rock. And then out stepped out the manifested body. Evidence of transcending clinical death by its own creativity. Therefore, man is soul, creative intelligence, called the Christ. That principle is locked up in us. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, which is within you, and his righteousness. And it will free you, free men of Lord of yourself. He demonstrated once and for all that power is locked up in us. Modern physics is now zeroing in on a lot of the things about the possibilities of the body. So to live to die is
selling the cells short. To live to live is respecting it for what it was intended to be. It is soul. It doesn't have a soul. It is soul. Which is its actuality now, technically speaking, it's living soil. But the word soil don't imply dirt. It implies that the 144 elements that make up our manifested universe is incorporated into a livingness, because God is of the living. Creative intelligence is of the livingness and not of the what?
Dead.
Powdered state, the petrified state, the terminal state. And if you're going to start a new universe, you have to start it from what state? Petrified state, to get activated again to make it function. So thus you are, thus you are. This is when we don't relate to what we are, then we phase off into a terminal state. But all your great men who have demonstrated, and the measuring test is death, all went through a clinical death. This is now, to him that overcometh, I will not send for the second. If we overcome clinical death by applying our divinity, which is soul quality in us, and accepting to live, to live, and not to live, to die, then we don't go forth a second time to experience clinical death. And there is no terminal death either, because you're a permanent pillar in the house of the Lord. We see that in a caterpillar emerging into a butterfly. So butterfly did it before us. Think of that. A caterpillar is like our large intestine. We came here to eat a lot and clean up. The butterfly came and ate, cleaned up as a caterpillar, and emerged out as a butterfly. Over the years, I've squashed up a lot of caterpillars, and they're rotted. But to this day, I've squashed butterflies that never saw rotten milk. Non-decomposing principle or soul nature is locked up in the human being, in the DNA, but not in the RNA. In the RNA, you have decomposition. You need oxygen to transcend the decomposition. The DNAs use oxygen. The RNAs don't. So you have physics now to back up a lot of the laws going on in the human body. The ancient men call that the kundalini, or the awakening of the internal forces. They spoke agricultural language. They were all accurate as observing and identifying the parts of the matrix that could do the job. Modern science has come along and has validated and only used modern terminology to say, yes, we do have these endocrine systems, we do have this helix, but it's one of the two that will provide decomposition or non-decomposition. RNA will provide decomposition. DNA will provide non-decomposition. Therefore, the pull between the two is placed in us to obey or to revolt. And RNA revolts. A DNA doesn't, because it's. That's why Jesus said before he gave up, he goes, not my will, but thy will be done. The creative consciousness is locked up in the DNA. The ego reaction is locked up in the RNA. You can muck it up. It's fantastic. Or you can surrender to it and it'll come to you. That's the thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can I make a statement? We have a butterfly basket over here for anyone who'd like to make a contribution for tonight. So.
And that's the RNA in you. And then you'll feel that you let yourself down and you want to do it at a later date, but you want to find out if it's sure that you should do it at a later date, that's the DNA in you. In all truth. Whenever you sit down to meditate, even if it isn't a time that you find appropriate, and our time is not going to be appropriate because of certain obligations or frustration, that is going to be there. Don't feel threatened by it. The fact that it's more important that you do take time out in 24 hours, wherever it is, to get some integration with yourself. So there are times I could not sit down to meditate between 3 and 5 in the morning. And the only time I had any opportunity was around 1 to 2 in the afternoon. And where I lived at the time, I live in a sub-basement house, where the road, I can see like that glass, where that beam is, was the road. And the streetcar in Canada was running over it every 15 minutes. So you know you ain't got no time and no place to go meditate. So I have to make up my mind once and for all. That's my confrontation, that's my devil, whatever I want to call it. I have to find time to go in. And not all possible, because I work at different hours of the night, but day. It's not always possible to get done. So finally, I came to the conclusion, what is more important? I wrote the organizer, what is more important? I don't have to. You know what the answer is? He said, the least you have done on the one of these, you've done it on me. And that was his answer. Meaning, the least time you spend just to look inside, you have synchronized with your creative nature. So that is more important that you did. Now, we call that income breath, because you pay income tax to Uncle Sam. He doesn't take all your money. He takes a portion of it, right? So God isn't going to take back all his bread from you because you didn't love him last night. So if you spend a little second or a few minutes just to close the eyes and feel the presence, this is a way of giving back what belongs to God. Then it will increase in its own. And later on, what was funny, the more I was able to get the time, the sound of the streetcar never bothered me. I was amazed one day, I was sitting there the streetcar is running, and I thought it was like in a distant area. This audible live stream that was permeating my mechanism that held me together became so loud, it shut down the sound of the streetcar. Now I walk around the audible live stream. It's always there. It's because I had to work. But I didn't know, I pushed my brain way down into delta level. And I was in that state for a long time. And I never realized I was in it because I had no way to measure it at the time. The machines weren't developed at the time. It's when I was standing in Dallas waiting for a Swami to come to the building to give a lecture. But I can feel this man long before he ever came in the airplane that he was coming early in the day, but I couldn't go see him or meet him in the plane, but I could feel his connectedness to me. And when he arrived at the building that night at 7 o'clock from the lecture at 8, he stood at the door and there were over 350 people. He looked all around and he started walking straight to me. Everybody moved away and he came right up. He said, I'm going to make this one right now. Well, that blew my ex-wife mind. What the hell is he? That makes me the Swami. But he performed the ceremony right there, touching the head, and gave me a Swami name. Then he said, sister, I'll make you a Swami. And he did the same thing here first. Because he recognized I was able to go down into the delta level for a minimum of 15 minutes and to shut off the resonance of the effect. And that's what it's basically for. when you can go in and then face down the sonic resonance of your thinking on you. Yeah. But don't quit. And no matter how long it takes, and if you don't find that you want to be consistent, don't let that hurt you. Most importantly, go for the prize. The prize is 15 minutes in Delta.
Don't fall asleep first. 45 minutes.
Go for it.
Everybody, Elliot and I, on Friday nights at our house, I don't know if you got the letter from John, we have a meditation, and if anybody wants to come, fine, it's at 8 o'clock Friday nights. And if you need the phone number or how to get there, you can ask me. One thing on the letter that John sent, it said 109 North Humphreys. It's 309. It's between Cherry and Dale, right across from the tower on the Catholic Church.
One question.
109 is my house in Houston.
Ah.
So that's what I made for you.
Ah.
Yours is 309.
Ken, about how long does that usually last?
We usually meditate probably 40 minutes to an
hour. Okay. All right, yeah, I have to give a fair indication when I come back.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thanks.